Food is fuel for your body, your mind, and definitely your sport. But let's face it, nutrition is confusing, and the expectations on girls and women to be thin and have a six-pack are exhausting. If you've ever been frustrated with your body, confused about nutrition, obsessed with eating healthy, or guilty when you don't, underate, overate, or overtrained, and overwhelmed with all the pressure, then this podcast is for you. Nutrition can be easy. You can take control of it, but it might start with letting go of control by asking for help and making a change. I'm Lindsay Elizabeth Cortez, sports dietitian and owner of Rise Up Nutrition, where I empower female athletes to overcome nutrition concerns and perform at their highest level, to stop being confused by all the mixed or harmful messages, and finally have confidence in your body as a fierce, fit, and fueled female athlete. Today's episode is thanks to our Patreon members and our affiliates and partners. Head to patreon.com/femaleathletenutrition to join our membership or donate to the podcast, and stay tuned to hear about some amazing deals and discounts from our partners, including Prevenix, Inside Tracker, Orgain, Practice Better, and Jen and Carrie. But for now, we're getting right to the show. Enjoy. Hello, fans and listeners. Lindsay Elizabeth Cortez, your host of the podcast, sports dietitian and owner of Rise Up Nutrition. I'm here with a fellow registered dietitian nutritionist, Cynthia. She helps women get their periods back. Cynthia helps women reverse hypothalamic amenorrhea, restore their health, and regain fertility. Cynthia's life purpose is to help women find balance with food, body, and exercise. She has over 10 years of experience and founded the Eat to Regain Your Period program in 2020. She's helped hundreds of women across the world get their periods and life back. When she's not serving women with her period recovery, you can find her traveling and having fun with the two loves of her life, her sons, Brian and Brayden. Cynthia, I'm so excited to have you on because you're a great fellow dietitian. I think there's so much in our work to support the needs of women that kind of overlaps. And so I'm just so excited to talk to you today.
Yes, I am so excited to talk, Lindsay, too, because this is near and dear to my heart personally and obviously professionally. But if it wasn't for the personal aspect of it, I don't know if I'd be here right now. So
totally. So let's start there and just dive into that. You know, yeah, because as a dietitian, there's so many things that you can do and ways that you can help people. But you were drawn to helping women overcome HA due to that personal experience and some things that you also went through and became passionate about. So do you mind just like telling our audience a little bit about your story? And actually, maybe before that, like, what is HA? What is hypothalamic amenorrhea? And then share your story with that.
Absolutely. So what is HA? So in a nutshell, your body's going into low energy availability mode, and you are having your sex hormones pretty much shut down. And that is all due to, there is, when I say energy availability, I mean food availability. And so not so much the food that you're consuming, but the food that has been maybe being stored in your body. So that shuts down because your body needs to survive, and reproduction, even though maybe your goal isn't to get pregnant, reproduction is kind of shut down along with sometimes other things as well. But for the essence of HA itself, it's typically a loss of period. However, there are more and more women out there that are experiencing regular periods with HA, but just not ovulating. So pretty much that access to the brain and the hypothalamus is kind of like roadblocked until there is enough food and energy availability around.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's something I've heard you speak about in just your content. You have your own podcast, which we'll share, and everything, social media, is that you actually can be getting your period, but not be ovulating. And so that's still a sign that you're still in this low energy availability and still struggling with HA if you're not ovulating.
Yeah. And HA is just so, I mean, the more and more it evolves, it's so not like one sentence, like period loss, like there's just no period. You know, it could be period loss, no ovulation. Leading up to HA, you could have maybe lighter periods. You could have more spaced out cycles. It could just magically disappear. Like, there's so many different ways you can kind of fall into it. And then let's not forget the fact that, and I know we're going to talk about birth control a little bit, but let's not forget the fact that when you're on birth control, it is pretty difficult to know if your period is missing. So there's also that.
Right, right. So in your passion for helping women navigate HA recovery, you know, this comes from your own personal story that you, this is something you went through.
Yes.
At what point in your life did you recognize that you were struggling with HA?
Oh gosh. So I'm going to flash forward to, I guess, when I knew exactly I was struggling at two. Actually, I'm going to start when I started to struggle with it, but didn't know it.
Okay.
Yeah. So I was always that, you know, typical health nut. I mean, I was going to college to be a dietitian, so I had to fit that bill of health. You know, I was always eating quote unquote healthy, lots of vegetables, being careful of bad foods. And I'm air quoting bad foods because there's no such thing as a bad food. And exercising daily, up to sometimes a few hours a day. So all pretty much, I feel like, normal stuff, right? And so I went on like this. I ended up getting engaged and married. That kicked my exercise and need to be healthy into high gear. And so if I had to pinpoint, because I was on birth control since I was like 15, at this point I was 26, I think. And so, I mean, I could have lost my period sooner than about around the time of my wedding. I'm not really sure.
I just don't know.
But if I had to, like, I guess, pick when it might have gone missing, it would have been right around that time where I started increasing my exercise and eating a lot less. So I decided to come off of birth control, I would say maybe like 6 months or so before I got married. And I'm like, well, you know, I just want to make sure everything's working okay. Cause I always had this like gut feeling that like I wasn't going to be able to easily get pregnant. I don't know like what it was. Obviously, I was right, but you trust your gut. It really does work.
Yeah.
So I came off the pill and no period. So obviously, I contacted my doctor, right? That would be the first thing to do. And they're like, oh, no big deal. This is normal not to have a period off, you know, right off the pill. So I was like, okay. Another couple months went by. I'm like, okay, still no period. I'm like, all right. Ask the doctor again. They're like, oh, yeah, it could take up to 6 months. And I'm like, okay, but something just didn't sit right. I'm like, this doesn't feel right. This doesn't feel normal. And again, this is, oh my gosh, over 10 years ago. And so, you know, there was not as much information, and there still is a lack of, but not as much information as there is now about HA and missing periods. So I was like, okay, well, all right, doctor says it's normal. So I'm going to trust that, even though, again, my gut was telling me otherwise. So flash forward to the wedding. I was like, well, crap, I don't want my period just to magically appear for the wedding.
On like, wedding day.
Who wants their period for their wedding?
Right.
And so I went back on the pill for a few months because I didn't want to get that surprise period. Came off of it. Again, no period. Again, the doctors were like, this is normal. And I'm like, no. Now I was like, no, this is not. Like, what's going on? So I started to research to the nth degree and found that I might have PCOS, right? And because HA at that time didn't fit the bill for me, right? I went to college. I learned about HA, which in my medical nutrition therapy class was women who have really low body weight or they're athletes and so forth. And I'm like, well, I don't fit that bill. I know we'll talk more about, you know, not being an athlete, but really training like an athlete. So I was like, okay, that's not me. So it must be PCOS. I ended up going to multiple different OBGYNs. One finally diagnosed me with PCOS. So I was like, oh yeah. So PCOS, polycystic ovarian syndrome. And that 10 plus years ago, the protocol to treat that was carbohydrate controlled, like making sure you're not eating too many carbs, that you're super active. So that like the wedding kicked up the you know, control with food and exercise, and then the PCOS diagnosis kicked it up a notch even more. So
even more.
My period was not coming back. And during that time, I thought I had it. So I was like, oh, let me try this supplement and do acupuncture and this and that. And I'm like, all right, what is going on? So I was like, all right, this still doesn't feel right. So then, gosh, flash forward, battling with what the heck was going on with me for about almost a good 5 years.
Wow.
Yeah. Like, and I was just hyper fixated on it, not only because I had that type A personality then, but I was so underfueled. I was an anxious ball of messiness,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And so finally, my OBGYN was like, well, let me refer you to a reproductive endocrinologist. I was like, yay, awesome. Like, finally, a referral out, you know? And so, and again, at this time, I was very, my mindset was, okay, well, the doctor knows best. Okay, the doctor knows best. So just go with what the doctor saying. And so finally, I got this referral to an RE. I'm going to use RE for short, for reproductive endocrinologist. And he's like, you have hypothalamic amenorrhea. I was like, no, I don't. Like right off the bat, he's like, tell me about your food and your exercise. And he's like, oh yeah, you have HA. And I was like, no. I was like, I learned about it in college. No, I don't. And so I did. And that was finally after almost a good 5 years. And at that time I was pushing, and I'm not saying age, you need to be pregnant by a certain age, but in my mind at that time, I was like, oh, I need to be pregnant by 30. Like, why is 30 the magic number? Anyway.
I don't know. Yeah.
So I was like, all right, well, just fast track, get me pregnant. Because he also did fertility stuff. But he's like, you need to cut out the intense exercise and eat more. I'm like, no, this doesn't make sense. Right? Because yeah. I've been trained as a dietitian, like society tells you, like the whole rest of the world, you don't eat more and exercise less, no matter what is going on with you. So mm-hmm. that was a big pill for me to swallow. Mm-hmm. And then flash forward, I ended up using an IUI to conceive my first baby, just because, as I would say, I got impatient. And then a colleague of mine said, no, Cynthia, you did not get impatient. You like exhausted all your options, and then, you know, you move forward with what you were desiring for a while. So I was like, yes, that's a good reframe. And so then I got pregnant after a few failed fertility treatments, because I know looking back now, I still wasn't fueling and resting my body appropriately, even though I cut back, right? Because and so many clients will say, well, I cut back on exercise and eating more. And that's great. And that was great for me, but it still wasn't enough for my body. So until I started eating enough, resting enough, and really taking care of my mental health and my stress, that's when I finally conceived off of fertility treatment. So fertility treatment isn't like a, you know, you do it and you're just magically pregnant. It doesn't happen that way.
Right. Even that's a process. Yeah. Yep.
Yep. So, and then about 12, 13 months postpartum, I was nursing. I got my cycle back naturally. And because I was still fueling and resting and still nursing. And then a few cycles later, on my third recovery cycle, I conceived my second baby naturally. And which I thought was like, oh my gosh, is it really that easy? So I've been on both sides of the spectrum of having difficulty and then, you know, it being like a sneeze and you get pregnant.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and at that point, after my second baby, I always had, you know, a little bit of work I was doing with other women. And then my sister-in-law said, why don't you focus on women specifically with this? And I was like, yes. I was like, because there, I don't want any other person out there to struggle the way I did and for as long as I did, and to get the answers that they need without, like, you know, it being a scavenger hunt. So, yeah. So, you know, between my, you know, empathy for a woman that actually, you know, is going through this or has gone through this, combined with, you know, my background as a registered dietitian for X amount of years, I was like, this is a no-brainer. And so in 2020, that was when, even though I was working with women with HA longer than before 2020, that was when I was like, you know what, the Eat to Regain Your Period program was born, and I created a method, 3-point method to address nutrition, exercise, mindset to help women get their cycles back and get pregnant if that's what they're desiring.
Right, right. Yeah, because I think there's so many parts of your story that are really important to hit on. You know, the first one being maybe not even classifying yourself as being able to have HA, because in your mind, you didn't fit that bill when we think that HA, oh, you have to be underweight or a certain body size or considering yourself an athlete, right? And then I think the other part of your story that's really important in you doing what you do is that misdiagnosis, you know, of thinking for so long that it was something else. And the fact that it took so long, you know, taking 5 years and being kind of misled or not getting the proper guidance despite your efforts of researching, you know. And then I think that last piece is the actual experience with pregnancy, both natural and with fertility treatment, I think are just really powerful parts of your story that make the work you do with your clients so beneficial because you've been through it yourself. So I kind of want to backtrack and talk about this, how even women who don't consider themselves to be athletes can overexercise. You know, what is the impact of exercise stress in its role in HA?
Yeah, well, again, me, right? I'm like, I'm not an athlete. Oh my gosh, looking back, I was probably more than an athlete. And when I got into CrossFit, oh my gosh, that again, that was around wedding time, and that just kicked it up all a higher notch. And then the competitiveness came in. And so, yeah, I wasn't deeming myself an athlete, but now, you know, I definitely was. I was training 2 hours a day in the morning before like a 9-10 hour shift as a clinical dietitian at the hospital. And then I would come home and run probably a few miles for quote unquote stress relief.
Yeah.
And so speaking of stress, right? So exercise, what does it do to the body? And so intense exercise pretty much is going to increase anyone's cortisol levels. But when you're dealing with HA, you're even that much more sensitive because you're already in this low energy availability mode, meaning AKA not enough food storage, you know, on the body or, you know, getting to the body. So that just adds another layer, right? So you could totally have HA without exercising, just, you know, so you know. But,
right,
you know, the effect of it, and I know, Lindsay, we were talking a little bit about this on when you were on my podcast episode, but really it is, think of, all right, you go for a run after work. So this is what I was doing. My body literally thought I was being chased by a lion, a bear, a tiger, I don't know, a crazy man. And I had to get out of danger. So it's going to increase all my stress hormones, including cortisol. And that's what my body's thinking. And since there isn't already enough energy around, not eating, and gosh, I'd be hungry before my run, I remember. And then I'd come home and I'm like, ooh, I'm not hungry anymore. So awesome. Oh, right.
Yeah,
but exercise will,
into that, yeah, even more.
Exercise, yeah, will suppress your appetite along with those stress hormones, because they're thinking like, I ain't got no time to be hungry. Like I'm, I need to survive. So in a nutshell, that's, you know, what's happening. Those stress hormones are playing an impact. And now, you know, research is showing that cortisol, you know, even alone sometimes could be impacting HA. So,
yeah.
So that's, you know, something to be mindful of. And so that's why, you know, it's important to take that time off from exercise, intense anyways, or too much frequency duration in the low intense movement. But it's really integral because your body doesn't know you're just going for a leisurely jog because, you know, you had a rough day at work.
Right, right. Hey fans, I hope you are enjoying this conversation so far, and we'll be back to it in just a moment. But first, I want to pause and let you know that this episode is brought to you by the Female Athlete System of Transformation, aka the Fast Track to overcome disordered eating and use food as fuel to perform at your highest level. The Female Athlete System of Transformation is my unique program and proven systems to guide female athletes to understanding and implementing the proper nutrition for their sport, life, and health. Myself and my team of registered sports dietitians work one-on-one with clients to address their unique needs and counsel them through the nutritional and behavioral changes needed. Many female athletes who resonate with disordered eating, mental guilt around food and body, relative energy deficiency in sport or female athlete triad,
amenorrhea, repeat injuries due to negligent nutrition, or frankly, just a lack of knowledge and understanding on their fueling needs, have seen incredible success in the fast track. After years of working as a sports RD, I've compiled the most effective ways for female athletes to learn nutrition, be supported, be challenged, and ultimately find their success with fueling as fast as possible. So don't wait another day. Get to your goals faster by joining the Female Athlete System of Transformation. Look in the show notes or head to the website to book a free call and learn more. Okay, now let's get you back to the conversation. Enjoy.
Yeah, and you know what? I've seen a lot. You know, I do work with athletes, but I think that there's a ton of athletes that don't consider themselves athletes. And like, I'm always like on the phone with potential clients being like, yes, you are an athlete. You're training like an athlete. But sometimes I actually might even say that the women who don't consider themselves athletes are putting themselves more at risk because they're not respecting the need for rest days, recovery days, or off seasons. You know, it's like if you have somebody who does consider themselves an athlete or who is on a sports team, like there's a built-in off season.
Yeah.
Where training comes down, where your body is rested, you know? Then we get to the level of course, like professional athletes where it's like that's their job. So, you know, somebody who's not a sponsored or professional athlete, like You said, you're waking up super early to train and then working on your feet all day. It's like
and then going for a run. Now. Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
So I actually really want to challenge those listeners who even maybe don't consider themselves athletes that, well, if you started to treat yourself like an athlete, you might actually take care of your body better by incorporating those rest and recovery days, putting your feet up, having an off season, and that, you know, might help balance your body and your hormones even better.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree. I mean, if I could go back and think that way, you know, knowing what I know now, of course, right? But you only know what you know when you know it. But if you're listening to this podcast right now, now you know it.
Right.
And that you can do that. And, you know, recovery days are just so important. And even if you don't have HA, and I remember, Lindsay, my recovery / rest days were running 3 miles or, I mean, there was no rest.
You were still, right.
Yeah.
So I think this is, I just want to ask you a very blunt question because I think if somebody were to Google HA recovery, something that is just seen over and over again is eat 2,500 calories and stop all exercise. I would just love to hear your response to that.
So I would say, you know, everybody is different. Okay. So everybody has different needs. Even if you had like a identical twin sister and you guys lived together, you did the same activities and ate the same foods, whatever it may be, her body's still going to be different. And so, you know, knowing that everybody is different, meaning there's no one set nutrition, if you want to call it a prescription or suggestion or advice, whatever, to fit all. Okay. And so depending how long your period's been missing, what body weight you're at, how much, you know, muscle, like there's so many different things that play into this. However, you know, HA recovery to me is very important you get individualized treatment on it because you're just, everybody is so different. However, if you are in a place of, you know, I can't get support, I can't afford, I don't have access to whatever it may be, you know, if you're eating, you know, 1500 calories, and now you're eating 2500 calories, and you stop exercise, this could potentially work for you. So I'm not saying it won't. But at the same time, there's so many different things that go into why a woman has lost her period. It wasn't just because, well, I woke up one day and I just wanted to train like an athlete and eat like a toddler. And so, and when I say toddler, because most women, especially around the height of 5 feet, they just think that 1500 calories is an acceptable amount of food. And calling anyone out because I was that girl at one point. And so, you know, going from some food to more food is great. But like I said, there's so many things that go into it mindset wise and why we lost it. For example, a relationship with body, a relationship with food, our upbringing, society. Like it is so multifaceted in how a person got to that place in most cases. And, you know, are there cases out there, Lindsay, that athletes, you know, they're pretty much, you know, that's their career and they end up losing their period because, you know, they're an elite runner or something like that. And they have no body image. They have no whatever. Yeah, I guess so. But the majority of, you know, people out there that are losing their menstrual cycles, it's just so multifaceted and into the why. So, yeah, you know, I'm not saying like, don't eat that much and stop exercise, but you also have to take into account, what if you do completely stop exercise and you go mental? Right? Yeah. Because that was your stress relief. You don't know how to relieve stress anymore. You're not seeing a therapist. Like, you know, so at the end of the day, if you can get that individualized support from a dietitian, you know, recovery specialist or eating disorder, disordered eating, like go for it.
Yeah.
But there's just so much more because I see so many, you know, women out there do this and, you know, eat more and stop exercise. And they're like, well, my second period hasn't come because they went back to eating less and moving more.
Yeah.
You know, and getting one period isn't like, oh, I'm done. Like I'm all recovered. So there's much, much more to it.
Yeah. I really appreciate what you said of, hey, if, you know, it has to be individualized, your nutrition, your fitness, your lifestyle, and the reasons behind why you got into this situation in the first place should be addressed. So it's super individualized. Nutrition should be individualized. But I do love just pointing out the fact that, like, if there's any reason why you cannot get support or, you know, financially, like, the whole point here is that the average female American has been told 2,000 calories is the standard diet. And then we have some weird thing in our brain with all of our influences that make us think we should eat less than that. So the point is, well, if you actually ate more than that and you did stop exercise, that could be a good place to start for those who don't have the resources to go get that individualized help. But it certainly isn't the answer for
everybody. No. And no. I have to say, it is better than going on birth control pills that are recommended by your medical professional, because that will bring you a period, but it is not a real period. So, yeah. So we can also say that trumps, you know, taking Provera, or which is a something that'll help induce a period, which also is a fake period. But yeah, I would say that would be a better option, eating more and resting more, which most medical professionals aren't going to tell you that, unfortunately. Maybe one day.
No, I know. I think you know, and you shared that in your personal story of being told to eat more and move less was just this, like, what? This is the opposite of everything I've heard my whole life. But I think, to say it bluntly, it is the truth when it comes to HIA recovery, right? Mm-hmm. And that's why, you know, nobody wants to hear it, but eating more and moving less. And sometimes I like to phrase it a little differently. It could be eat differently.
Yes.
Move smarter.
Yeah.
You know, that's another way that, because, you know, there's, I think it is a hard pill for people to swallow, eat more, move less. But it is the truth when you're recovering. But there are other ways that you can go about it and think about it. Just like we were saying, like, if you're doing 2 hours of CrossFit and a run every day, like, then maybe just moving less and doing just the run is okay for your body. We don't know. You know, this is why these things are individualized.
Absolutely.
And you have to really get in there and recommend working with a professional such as yourself or myself. So I want to go back to another piece of your story, which was this misdiagnosis for PCOS. And I kind of just want to dive into how somebody, whether you use your personal story or just want to speak from your knowledge, like, how can somebody decipher between HA and other infertility issues that might be out there?
Great question. So HA really is a diagnosis of exclusion. So you want to make sure that you don't have a pituitary tumor, which is pretty darn rare. I haven't had any clients that have had that happen to, but it can cause amenorrhea. So it's good to rule that out. And usually doctors will order an MRI to rule that out. And also, you know, the PCOS thing, other gynecological things that I don't even know of, you know, just getting your labs drawn, an ultrasound, you know, ruling out anything that could be potentially causing amenorrhea, which again, I haven't come across anything with women that are exercising on a frequent basis, eating quote unquote healthy, that is causing amenorrhea, but the lack of energy intake. So, wow. But it's also good to rule it out so you can get a peace of mind. Cause I mean, I even struggled with like, no, this doesn't seem possible. This doesn't, I don't fit in this little HA box that I thought there was. So that is important to rule that out. And now as far as other infertility stuff, there is stuff out there that could be causing, it could be a blocked fallopian tube, maybe endometriosis, stuff like that. But you're going to be able to see that, you know, with ultrasounds and stuff like that. So here's the thing with PCOS. So I don't know the stats on this, but I imagine it's high because not only did it happen to myself, I would say over half of my clients are like, yeah, my doctor said I had PCOS. And they end up only being told they have PCOS because of ultrasound, because the doctors are seeing these tiny little cysts in their ovaries, which aren't exactly cysts. They're actually follicles. So I'll explain that a bit. So yeah. Your menstrual cycle has different phases. So you have your follicular phase, you have your ovulatory phase, you have your luteal phase, and then you have your menstruation, which is your period. So women that have HA are pretty much stuck in their follicular phase, because they don't have any hormones to move them on to the next stage, which is ovulation. So they stay in this follicular phase, and these little follicles, which doctors will say are cysts, they just can't grow any bigger to produce maybe 1 to 2 mature follicles that will release that egg for ovulation. So they're like, oh my gosh, tons of cysts, PCOS, boom, blanket, done. So that was me. And PCOS, I actually have a great podcast episode with Sam. She's PCOS nutritionist. And we kind of go into, you know, the what is HA, what is PCOS, which I'm not going to, it's going to, we would fill the rest of our time talking about it. So pretty much you shouldn't be diagnosed just by one thing with PCOS. So if your doctor looks at an ultrasound and doesn't combine that with lab work or having abnormal hair growth, then yeah. I don't want to say no.
Multiple. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So to get, yeah, I think this is important because a lot of women do have PCOS. That I forget the numbers on it, but like, I feel like it's like 15% of the female population truly does have PCOS.
Yep. There is a good amount. Yeah.
So there's a good amount. So I think it is compared to like the pituitary lesion, which is like really rare. Yes. Or like my personal story, I actually did struggle. I had an ovarian tumor.
Okay.
When I was a teenager, but that's like 1 in 20,000.
Yeah.
Like, or 200,000. Like, it was like really rare. So like those things are rare, but I think the PCOS one is one that people are like misdiagnosed with a lot. So I think just your advice of, sure, do the ultrasound, but look at the blood work, look at your symptoms.
Yep.
And then also look at your exercise and dietary habits, you know, because I actually have had a handful of clients that have, honestly, very few compared to the amount of clients I've worked with. Like, I think like 2 or 3 out of like 200 plus clients that did have low energy availability. And I do think that they were also in red S and HA, but also did have PCOS. But that was like, yeah, like I said, like 3 out of like 200 plus clients. So it's really a low amount. But I think just looking at everything.
Absolutely.
To get there.
Yep. Yeah. And if you're, let's just say I'm concerned I have both. That's still, we want to follow that HA protocol.
Yeah, you still have to heal the HA first.
Yes. And then deal with the PCOS.
Exactly. Because if you do the nutrition tips to, you know, work with PCOS, then you're not healing the HA.
Yeah. Nope.
Yeah. So you have to heal HA first. Okay. So I want to kind of, as you were explaining the menstrual cycle and stuff too, I would love for you, a lot of your clients look to you to heal HA so that they can become pregnant, whether like soon or in their near future. And I think we touched on this already, but that like importance of ovulation, can you touch on that just a little bit more? And maybe how do you like, let's say you are getting a bleed, you don't know if you're ovulating or not. Like, can we touch on the importance of ovulation for pregnancy and then maybe how to know if you are ovulating?
Absolutely. And so I am finding this more and more and more that HA is just not, you don't get a period and that's it. Mm-hmm. Eventually, what I would say would happen for a woman who is, you know, ovulating and getting a period and not eating enough and so forth, eventually it's going to come to a head and something is going to give. So sometimes that's ovulation first and she'll continue to get her period. And then maybe eventually her period will just disappear as well, depending how deep she goes. But ovulation is, if you're not ovulating, you are, there's no way in like the miracle of miracles that you will conceive without ovulation. So ovulation, you know, are getting a mature enough follicle to produce an egg that will eventually fall down into your fallopian tubes and, well, not that easy, but, you know, speaking in, you know, very simple terms, and wait for the sperm to fertilize and then thus eventually get to your uterus, implant. And another thing, while we're on the topic, women with HA, not this doesn't happen to all, but they still have pretty low levels of hormones, even if they maybe did get an ovulation, but progesterone is what builds up on your uterine lining. And if you get pregnant, you want a nice thick lining for that little fertilized egg to implant into. And if there isn't one thick enough, this could increase the risk of miscarriage. So not saying that is the only reason why. There's a million and bazillion different reasons why a woman can miscarry a baby, but it's important that, you know, true recovery is, you know, being there. And if you're concerned, if this sounds like you, I don't know if my progesterone levels are okay, you can always talk to your doctor, let them know you have a history of HA, you're not sure if your progesterone, they can check them, give you supplements, so forth. So, but yeah, the ovulation, you're not going to get pregnant without it. And so to answer your other question, Lindsay, how do I know if I'm ovulating? And I can tell you if someone, gosh, I knew nothing about the menstrual cycle when I was getting pregnant. I thought you just, you know, had sex and you got pregnant and that was the end of the story, right? Mm-hmm. And no, there's timing involved. So,
well, that's because that's what they teach you in high school, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess
you'll get pregnant. So,
I guess good thing that they do, right?
I know. But then it's like all these women, then when they're 26 yeah. to 32 like, trying to get pregnant, they're like, what? Why is this so difficult?
Yeah. Uh-huh. You know? Yep. We spend our whole lives maybe trying to prevent. And then it's like, yeah. What the heck?
Yeah.
So really, ovulation occurs typically in like a 24-hour window. But you can, you know, if you do have intercourse before ovulation or after ovulation, there's still a chance of pregnancy. But how do you know if you're ovulating? And this is not always the easiest thing to do. And it takes a little bit of, I mean, I don't want to say self-teaching, but, you know, getting support in this department as yeah. well, or researching, so forth. But you want to see, so your BBT is your basal body temperature. And so you want to get a BBT thermometer, which is pretty much like a thermometer you can stick under your tongue and check your temperature every morning. However, what's really difficult about temping is that there's so many factors that play into part of your basal body temperature, such as dehydration, drinking, not enough sleep, making sure the thermometer is in your mouth long enough to be calibrated to know that you're actually getting your true BBT. So there's a lot kind of involved. You got to do it every single morning. And so if you see a nice shift in temperature, which is usually a decrease in your BBT and then a sharp increase, that will confirm ovulation along with some egg white cervical mucus. So I always like to tell my clients looking for both of those, not just like one or the other, because someone could have this egg white cervical mucus, which is pretty much think of an egg white, raw egg white, and not be ovulating. So if, you know, in fact, you're like, oh, yeah, I see this, but I don't know, you can start temping. But the thing is, I like to also tell my clients, yes, I know you want to conceive like yesterday, but we need to get your body in a place to not only be able to conceive, but to hold conception and carry a nice full term pregnancy. So let's focus on the things that we can control, which isn't our BBT. Our BBT, basal body temperature, is going to be controlled by us fueling enough and resting enough. So let's put the energy there. So that, again, going back to how temperature shift, you know, a sharp decrease and then rise, combined with egg white cervical mucus. If you want, you can also go to the doctors. They can confirm ovulation through ultrasound, but usually it's like a pre-ovulatory ultrasound and a post to actually see that that follicle got big enough, release egg, blah, blah, blah. So not many doctors will be like, yeah, come in. We'll just, you know, run random ultrasounds on you. But if you are seeing a fertility specialist, sometimes they will do that. But in a, I guess, complete little bit of a nutshell, you're looking for that temperature shift and you're also looking for that egg white cervical mucus. And I also like to say, if you're driving yourself crazy in this process of like taking your temps, watching your CM, that's when you want to take a step back and be like, okay, what is within my control? And what is in your control is how you're fueling your body, how you're resting your body. And if you can't get that into check and control, that's when you reach out for support. And I know most of us are perfectionists and think, well, I could do this myself. Why not get support? What's it going to hurt? Mm-hmm.
Thanks to Inside Tracker, I can get insights and feedback on my blood biomarkers whenever I want to. No more waiting for doctor's visits and them telling you, you're fine. Instead, you are in control of your health with Inside Tracker. For 20% off any of their products, blood biomarker testing, DNA kit, interage, head to InsideTracker.com and use the code RISEUP. Take your health into your own hands. Health, wellness, and fitness coaches, listen up. Practice Better is the all-in-one platform that I use to manage my business and my clients. From client scheduling and messaging, hosting sessions, taking notes, creating modules, invoicing, telehealth, building reports, and more, Practice Better is the better way to manage your practice as a nutrition or health or fitness coach. Look no further. Use the link in our show notes and use the code RISEUP20 for 20% off your first 4 months plus a 14-day free trial. I've been using Practice Better since the inception of my business, Rise Up Nutrition, and I couldn't be happier. Again, the code is RISEUP20, all caps. Use the link in our show notes for 20% off your first 4 months and a 14-day free trial. Let's get back to the episode.
Well, and sometimes tracking of these things can be so insightful, but if that's bringing you more stress and anxiety, then you might be focusing your energy on not the right things, like you were saying. Like, we're focusing on tracking instead of focusing on the behaviors that might actually improve our results.
Yes.
I have one client in particular, and if she listens to this, I know she's going to know who she is. Because I'm always telling her this. I'm like, You're stressing yourself out with the tracking instead of just continuing to focus on, you know, all this other stuff. Put your energy where it's actually going to give you the results.
Yeah.
She is doing really well. That's her, what do you call it? Like, your Achilles heel. That
yes.
She just kind of keeps going back to is keep hyper-focusing on
tracking. And I have
tracking
to tell you.
Cervical mucus and basal body temperature, which, and heart rate.
And yeah. It's so natural, because if we just, for instance, majority of us have at one point or another tracked calories, tracked macros,
yeah,
tracked weight, whatever it is. And so it's like a natural, almost natural tendency to want to control and, you know, focus on the outcome versus let's focus on the behaviors that
the behaviors and actions
are going to get us, yep, the outcome that we desire. So easier said than done.
Totally.
But, you know, if you're stressing more, that stress, that mental stress isn't going to help the HA, isn't going to help the pregnancy. You want to think of your little, you know, belly, uterus as this like safe little container that you're trying to grow another human in. And instead of having those limiting beliefs of like, you know, I'm never going to get my period back, I'm never going to get pregnant, you know, I'm going to need fertility treatment. And FYI, I'm not saying fertility treatment is something to completely avoid, because it worked for me after I was feeling enough. But having those limiting beliefs of feeling like you're not going to or whatever, we want to really switch that mindset and be like, I am going to get pregnant. I think that was a big thing for me too, Lindsay, was not only was I fueling more and resting more, which is a huge component, I was starting to switch my mindset. I was starting to, you know, put out in the universe like, no, I am going to be a mom. I am going to be pregnant. And I'm going to do things not only to support my food and my rest, but my mental health, such as I got into yoga, some breath work, meditation. I don't know if I started going to therapy then or it was before, but really working on, you know, myself. And I'm so glad. I know I wouldn't say this in the moment, but I'm so glad that it didn't happen exactly when I wanted it to, because I wouldn't have been as healthy and as ready to be a mom.
You saw so much growth. Yeah. And you really manifested that for yourself. And that's another thing too, is that that work of believing in yourself, of embodying, you know, the mom mindset, perhaps helped you make the choices that were truly in alignment with you taking care of your body and mind so that you did become a mom, you know? Mm-hmm. I always kind of say you have to believe it before you see it.
Absolutely.
You know, the opposite of what we think. So I think that's what you did too. And, you know, I wanted to focus this conversation with you a little bit more on like the fertility and pregnancy side of HA, just mm-hmm. because it's not something I focus on quite so much with my clients who might be more athlete oriented. However, as a female athlete, like there's many of us that want to someday or do eventually or are mothers of children. So I think this is really important to talk about. And, you know, I want to touch on the – actually, one more comment I want to make. I just want to backtrack a little bit. I probably, as a female athlete, even though I wasn't trying to get pregnant, when I learned about the pregnancy process is when I learned the most about my hormones that actually helped me in athletics as well. So I actually do recommend, you know, female athletes that aren't interested in getting pregnant right now, still sometimes going to these, you know, motherhood or trying to conceive sites and websites and learning about ovulation, learning about your cycle, learning about what it takes to become pregnant will give you that knowledge and insight that you need to just know about your cycle, ensure you have a healthy cycle for life, for health, for athletics, and then when you do want to, if you ever do want to become pregnant, then you already know that too. So I just want to share that win-win. It's like they don't, I mean, I'm trying, this is my space. I'm trying to talk about the importance of hormones for athletes from the athletic spectrum. But like, if you're not finding that information, then just learn about your hormones from the fertility perspective, even if you're not trying to get pregnant, and you'll learn a lot. So like, yeah. I like the basal body temperature stuff. Like I learned about all of that on websites about trying to conceive, even though I wasn't trying to conceive, but that was super insightful because even from an athletic perspective, I'm like, whoa, that changes your training when you're in the heat and hydration. And when you live in places like Texas and you're running 15 miles in the heat and your basal body temperature is higher during certain phases of your cycle. Like that's it. Really interesting stuff to know. So anyways, that's a little blip I just wanted to add in there is even if you're not trying to get pregnant, like learning about it is so insightful to your body.
And Lindsay, could I just recommend a book and just say add a little bit onto that? So there's a book called The Fifth Vital Sign by Lisa Hendrickson Jack, and she talks all about your cycle. But I wish when I was an athlete or training like an athlete, I knew about the cycle because there's not only like the training, how you can adapt, you know, your training schedule to your menstrual cycle, but there's so many other things that you can attach to it, such as, you know, there's information out there, follicular phase, which is the first half of your cycle after your period. You're more creative. You have more energy. Ovulation, you should see a spike in your libido, be more playful. Your luteal phase, typically you are more drained and tired and just like, you know, so, and there's so much more that's attached to the menstrual cycle. And so Lisa Hendrickson Jack, you know, the fifth vital sign, which really your cycle is, you can tell if there's something off with your body, if your menstrual cycle is a week late or even a few days late, or, you know, the flow is different, whatever. There's just so much. And it's so fascinating. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you for recommending that. Amazing. Oh my gosh, we're running out of time, but I have more questions for you. So I want to hit on like timeline expectations and also I do want to talk about fertility treatment. So maybe let's first start with like a timeline expectation for HA recovery. I know that, frankly, recovery is going to take as long as or as short as kind of that effort you put into it. And I don't want people to feel bad if it's taking them a long time, but just like, you know, the more kind of all in you are into the process, probably the quicker it will happen. But do you have any insight as to like the moment somebody's like, okay, I'm going to, you know, really address HA and do the things I need to recover, maybe sign up for your program or something like that. Like, when could they expect to say that they are healed?
Absolutely. So first, I want to say, you know, if you haven't done anything to address your HA, that's okay. Maybe you're just learning about it now. But where I see a big disconnect before clients reach me, Lindsay, is that they've tried the process already. So they started eating more, they started resting more, if you want to call it all in, whatever. And they're like, oh my gosh, what gives? I'm doing all of the things. And the disconnect is that what you think you're doing and what your body actually needs are two different things. And while it's amazing that you've done some stuff, it also can keep us stuck because we think this is all we need to do, or we're maybe fearful of weight gain or, you know, other reasons. So that's one thing. So it all depends. If you're giving your body what it needs and you're not at a super, super low weight, because we also have to think about weight restoration, which also, you know, is important, but also isn't the end all be all of you getting your cycle back if you, you know, are quote unquote a normal BMI now. So I can tell you it is 100% across the board, completely individualized. But I like to say, if you've been at period recovery by yourself for 3 months or longer and you have not gotten a period yet, then that's when it's time to either get support or eat more and rest more.
So there's more that, so if it's been at least 3 months and you don't have it, then there's more that needs to be done.
Yes, 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 absolutely. And sometimes it's just so hard for us to see that if we're the ones going through it, because we're caught up in the society that is doing normal things, eating less and moving more. So it's really hard to see. And there's a million other reasons why, you know, it's hard for us to see, you know, what's actually going on. So again, 3 months, no period, get support or increase your intake, decrease your output of physical activity or exercise. So I can tell you with my clients, Lindsay, I usually give an average of 8 to 10 weeks of recovery. Typically, I would say 9 out of 10 women come to me and they're like, I've tried a lot and I'm still, you know, not able to get my cycle back. So, you know, I've had women get their cycle back within a week of my program because just the stress,
that
right?
One switch or something.
That stress of like, someone is going to reassure me. Someone is going to tell me what I need. Yeah. That stress level of the constant thoughts of when is it going to come and blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. That sometimes is like a flip of a switch. Mm-hmm. I would say that's more of a rarity. Yeah. But then
it's fun when it happens.
Yes. And then I've also had women, they've gotten pregnant before they even get their first recovery cycle back, which is so awesome, especially if they're wanting to, which most of them are. And then, you know, there's the woman that is, you know, doing all the things again within my program, but still needs to make adjustments because maybe her body was at it a little bit longer. And again, length of time of your missing period isn't dependent on how quickly or slowly you're going to get your period back either. So
that's a good thing to know. Yeah. So for the person who's been missing their period 6 months versus 6 years,
no, there's no correlation. There really isn't.
No correlation.
I can tell you the one correlation I do see, Lindsay, is that women that have primary amenorrhea, like that have not had a menstrual cycle at all in their entire life, that tends to take.
That takes longer.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I see that too, especially since I do work with a significant group of high school and college athletes. So I do have a lot of primary amenorrhea cases, and that is taking a little bit. That does take longer than the situation of restoring your lost cycle.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, yeah. So,
but the process is still the same. Just for those listening, that the actions that you need to focus on, the changes, nutrition, lifestyle, training, mindset changes are still the same. It just might take a little bit longer.
Absolutely. And I want to break the myth of, you know, if I do HA recovery, whether it's by myself or with, you know, Cynthia or Lindsay or whoever, do I just have to eat like all the bad, quote unquote, bad foods, which again, no such thing. And, you know, sit on the couch and watch Netflix. And no, you don't.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I just want to throw that out there.
Although you can if you want to.
Yes, totally. Absolutely. When someone finally was like, you need to like cut out the gym and stop exercising, I was like, oh my God, someone gave me permission to stop. Yeah. And then I have other clients who are like, oh no, no, no. Like I still have to do something. So it, you know, it's again, back to the individualization.
Yeah. I think our, you know, the population, again, this is generalizing, but a majority of the population like that is in this situation does fear eating ice cream and watching Netflix. So that's why we're saying, okay, there's another way. But also, like, if you want to, you can do that. And that will help you. And it is enjoyable and glorious, actually.
Yes, 100%. Yep.
So one other kind of thing I wanted to dive into was, and you've already mentioned it, so I'll just kind of summarize that, hey, choosing fertility treatment is not wrong. There are many reasons to go down that path. And, you know, I think just you normalizing and sharing that you did that to conceive one child as well, but also hitting on the importance of you still need to be healthy enough to carry a child. So you can go down the path of fertility treatment, but maybe your progesterone levels aren't high enough to strengthen your uterine lining and to carry that child, or just your nutrition or your mindset's not there yet. And I've had this experience as well. I have had two clients come to me from the athletic side of things that did, and you know, needing to fix their hormones as well. And then they did go down the path of fertility treatment. And one of them, you know, knows, well, both of them, I would say that despite doing fertility and not doing this, quote, naturally, the work that we did with their nutrition is what allowed them to have a baby, because otherwise, you know, there were many missed or I guess I'll use the word failed attempts. Yeah. I don't know if that's like the proper way to say it, but prior to making the appropriate nutrition changes. So you do still have to be strong and fit and healthy enough to carry a child. Could you share a little bit about what fertility treatment could look like? And I think kind of I want to follow up on that timeline question, because again, there's so many athletes that are prioritizing their athletic careers and then they're like, okay, now I want to have a baby, but like this could take time, you know?
Yeah.
Could you share a little bit of that?
Yeah. So I can speak, you know, personally on this too, but you know, fertility treatment is, I don't want to say, I feel like it's sort of glorified-ish by certain accounts on social media, like, oh, I'm, you know, going through IVF, and which again, if this is your choice, that's okay. But also, you know, knowing that you can do this naturally. And if you do pursue fertility treatment by eating enough, resting enough is going to enhance that. And so think of it this way, your body needs to feel safe enough to carry another human being. And this goes back to a little bit of caveman times, where if there was no food around and you were running all the time from monsters, well, not monsters, but you know, maybe there was monsters then, but you were running away from dangerous things. Now, this is the same equivalent to you going for a run in your neighborhood and not eating enough, even though your pantry is full and stocked. So your body isn't going to feel safe enough, even if it's able to, you know, get even close to conception. And then talk about the mindset component of behind it. If your body doesn't feel safe mentally, physically, nutritionally, it's going to be a lot harder to conceive or keep that pregnancy despite the most amazing fertility treatments in the world. And not only that, the time commitment to fertility treatment. My first fertility treatment was an IUI. So that's like the step before you would take before IVF, which is a lot more intense. I never went through IVF, but for me with IUI, I mean, I was getting maybe weekly or twice weekly ultrasounds, daily shots in my belly, lab work, and, you know, timing of things, a big HCG trigger shot in my butt. If you don't like needles, I'll tell you what, fertility treatment is not for you.
Yeah.
And so, you know, there's a lot that goes into it mentally, physically and financially. Luckily, at the time, I had just switched jobs. And so it covered fertility treatment. But I mean, people out there are spending hundreds and thousands of dollars to get pregnant. I mean, I'm not saying that HA is the cause of all the infertility out there. It's not.
No.
But there are a lot of individuals out there that their doctors are like, you're so healthy, you're so fit, keep doing what you're doing. When if they just told them to eat more and rest more and take care of themselves, you know, maybe mentally better, they would get pregnant. But you have to remember, fertility doctors are in business for fertility.
They're in business too. Yeah. So they're going to push that.
And that's what they know. That's what they know. And that's what you're coming to them. You're like, I want to get pregnant. So that's what they're going to try to help you do, you know, with how they know how to do it. So.
Right. Right. Absolutely. Yes. I think both of us are being very clear. It's not wrong to go down that path. However, if we do have reason to believe that HA is the cause of infertility, there's another way to explore that might not help you with fertility alone, but also help you with all of your health and your life and future pregnancies as well. You know, maybe because people going through fertility treatment, you know, for one child, what if you do want to have a second or a third? And so it's just giving yourself that option to do it naturally. And I think even that financial piece, like you said, it's a big financial investment.
Yeah, and that causes stress too.
And sure, financially investing in your program or my program is an investment as well, but I would say less of an investment and with a long-term solution.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, Cynthia, thank you so much. This has been an awesome conversation. I want any woman struggling with HA to go ahead and give you a follow on social media. You are the Period Nutritionist or at period.nutritionist. I will include all your links in the show notes as well. And as all of my guests, I ask kind of rapid fire questions at the end. Are you ready to play along?
Yes.
Okay. If there is one food you could eat every single day for the rest of your life and never get sick of it, what would it be?
Oh gosh, I eat, Lindsay, so dependent on my mood, but I have to say tacos.
Fun. Awesome. Come down to San Antonio. We have the best tacos all day, every day.
Awesome.
What's your favorite sport to participate in?
Oh, gosh. I want to say right now, currently, is playing street hockey with my son.
Oh, so fun.
That's been fun. So, and I'm hoping to do volleyball, recreational volleyball this year again. I did that last year. That was fun. So, yes. But I was a former gymnast and cheerleader. So that also has my heart a little bit. But I'm getting a little bit too elderly to perform those movements.
I know. I still try and throw a cartwheel every once in a while just to make sure I can, and a backbend. Yeah. So next question then is, how about as a spectator, what's your favorite sport to watch and be a fan of?
I have to say right now is hockey. My son is starting to play hockey and I'm like, oh, you know, I never really got into it till now. So I would have to say hockey right now. Yeah. Yep.
It's a great spectator sport and it's actually so cute with the little kids. My brother, my brother's a man now, but I just have all these memories of him as a little boy playing hockey because he's 8 years younger than me. It's just the cutest thing.
It is.
Yeah. So cute. All right. And then last question, if there's a female athlete out there that you want to give a shout out to for being an inspiration or role model for any reason, someone well-known or in your personal life, who would that be?
Let me see. I would have to say my colleague and a friend, Dr. Ashley Moody, who she actually helped me create a little bit of, I have a small exercise program within my Eat to Regain Your Period group coaching program. And she went through a crazy GI surgery, almost lost her life. Mm-hmm. Luckily, she was strong enough before it to survive it all, to save herself from a lot of reconstruction of her abdominal area. And she got right back to it and rehabbing herself afterwards. And she's got this actually happened when she was 16 weeks pregnant. So, and now she's doing beautifully and she's inspiring female athletes around the country to do nice, gentle, low intense movement to strengthen overall mentally and physically. So yeah, I would say it'd be her.
Amazing. Shout out to her. And as you mentioned, you know, your programming, helping women overcome HA that focuses on the nutrition, the mindset, and including that movement and exercise piece, you know, that Dr. Ashley
is part of in your programming. So thank you again so much, Cynthia. www.periodnutritionist.com to learn more and follow along. Thanks for joining.
Thank you, Lindsay.
Well, everybody, thanks for listening. I really hope you enjoyed that episode. And if you did, if you are a true fan of female athlete nutrition, then I would love if you could support our podcast by spreading the word. Share a review on your listening channel. Give us 5 stars. It really helps get the word out and get the show more views to positively impact others. Also, you can support the podcast by joining our Patreon. Head to patreon.com/femaleathletenutrition to consider a donation, or even better, join our membership where you get extra monthly content and perks. We don't want you to simply listen alone. We want you to be a part of a community and a movement of fierce, fit, and fueled female athletes. So patreon.com/femaleathletenutrition is where you can do exactly that, learn more, and join. A huge thanks to our affiliates and partners as well. Once again, Prevenix, Inside Tracker, Orgain, Practice Better, Jen and Carrie. Please go check them out and their links in the show notes where you can get deals and discounts. Last, be sure that you do more than just listen. If you need help with fueling, it's time to take action. Head to my website to learn more. You can either book a free call with me to learn more about our coaching programs and how we can work directly with you, whether it's the fast track or otherwise. Or you can take our online self-study course, Female Athlete Nutrition. You can literally sign up and gain access right now. You can explore our downloadable products, including the Red S Recovery Guide, High Iron Fueling Guide. Or if you are a coach of a team, check out our brand new Coaches Toolkit for teams. You can also just learn more. We have a blog, a Red S quiz to see if Red S is affecting you. If you need help, I want you to get help fast. Too many girls and athletes struggle with nutrition, but you don't have to any longer. You can rise up with the power of nutrition, take action today in any of these avenues, and become fierce, fit, and fueled. Links in the show notes, and we'll see you next time.